and democracy cannot participate in this protest, as impressive as it is, as powerful as it is. But we have to remember they are concerned only about themselves, only about democratic regime for the Jews in Israel, not for anyone else who lives between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean.
Saddam, very quickly, we have just a minute. What do you think the international community should be doing? How can the Palestinians be supported now, given this massive onslaught of violence?
I want to add something, that it was a barbaric sight that you can only describe by an ethnic cleansing. It's very sure that this is the proper description for what happened. But for the international community, we need them to interfere and to bring peace and stability to the Middle East, not the United States. You know, the United States of America is a party to the conflict. United States of America is a part of this conflict. It's not a referee. USA is not the judge, is not the proper judge for this conflict.
Saddam, we have 5 seconds.
The United States of America, yes, United States of America is providing the occupiers with full support. They have to stop, and the international community should interfere to protect the civilian.
Saddam Omar and Gideon Levy, thank you so much.
You
for
are
being
tuned
with us
in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
KBOO is hiring a full-time web coordinator. The web coordinator maintains the front end of KBOO's website, promotes episodes, does copy editing, and helps train staff and volunteers on various website features. For the full job description and instructions for applying, please go to our website at kboo.fm/webhire23. Applications are due at midnight on Thursday, March 9th. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this special programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 2. This February and March, you will hear different marathons and series, all brought to you by our talented programmers, including specials like Black History and Future series. If you'd like to help KBOO reach our $17,000 goal by March 25th, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321 right now. We thank you, and you're welcome.
Rise them up, KBOO 90.7. You don't know it's your girl, Tasha T.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. I would like to thank all of the listeners who supported us during our recent fund drive. Today, we are going to focus on Haiti, the 2004 coup against the democratically elected President Jean-Bertrand Aristide took place in 2004, a leap year, on February 29th. So today, actually, is the anniversary of that coup. Right-wing ex-army paramilitaries invaded the country from across the Dominican Republic with the backing of the United States. Jean-Bertrand Aristide was later forced into exile in the Central African Republic and later in South Africa. And today, 19 years later, Haiti continues to be destabilized. Right now, under an unelected acting president, Ariel Henry. Henry was selected by former Haitian President Jovenel Moïse, who was assassinated. The Moïse regime was unpopular. Since what some say was his selection rather than an election to be president. Hundreds of thousands of people had taken to the streets of Haiti for several years, demanding that he step down and that he and his predecessor, Marc Dely, be held to account for millions of dollars missing in the Petro-Caribe scandal. The country is also facing a resurfacing of cholera and an uptick in what is called gang activity. Some say it is a resurgence of death squads. Today, we are going to be joined by two guests with Edward Pacha Volpe, who is on the executive committee of Fanny Lavalas. He is based in Haiti, and Pierre Lavoisier, one of the most respected progressive voices on Haitian politics in the U.S. He is originally from Haiti and is a co-founder of the Haiti Action Committee. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnested. A special House committee dedicated to countering China began its work with a primetime hearing last night to warn of dangers the Chinese government poses to the U.S. economy and security. It's part of a surge in China-related actions on Capitol Hill, all coming amidst worries over Chinese spy balloons, tensions in the Taiwan Straits, and concerns about China's potential role in Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Christopher Martinez reports.
Republican Michael McCaul is chair of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. He opened its first hearing since Republicans took control of the House, under the title, Combating the Generational Challenge of Chinese Communist Party Aggression.
There's no doubt that the growing aggression of the Chinese Communist Party poses a generational threat to the United States.
The Foreign Affairs Committee hearing was one of a series of China-related events on Capitol Hill Tuesday. The House Science, Space, and Technology Committee also held a hearing on competition with China. The newly created House Select Committee on Strategic Competition between the U.S. and the Chinese Communist Party held its first hearing. And in the House Financial Services Committee, lawmakers approved a package of 10 bills, including the Protect Taiwan Act and the China Financial Threat Mitigation Act of 2023, all passing by either unanimous or overwhelmingly bipartisan margins. Though Democrats and Republicans both spoke of the need for bipartisanship, there were still some differences. At least a difference of emphasis came in the financial services hearing. Democrat Maxine Waters of California.
Anti-Asian American violence has skyrocketed in the wake of COVID-19 pandemic, fueled significantly by former President Donald Trump. We have a responsibility to avoid language that stokes hatred and fuels xenophobia and violence against the Asian American community.
I'm Christopher Martinez.
China slammed the House committee hearing last night, demanding its members, quote, discard their ideological bias and zero-sum Cold War mentality, unquote. A foreign ministry spokesperson said the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party must view China and China-U.S. relations in an objective and rational light. She said the new committee should stop framing China as a threat and stop denigrating its Communist Party to score political points at the expense of China-U.S. relations. Ukraine's military may decide to pull troops back from the key eastern stronghold of Bakhmut after a bloody months-long Russian offensive to capture the city, according to an advisor to Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky. Meanwhile, another advisor denied Ukraine had used drones to attack Russian territory yesterday. Russia's defense ministry alleged Ukraine had targeted infrastructure deep inside the country. Meanwhile, NATO's head Jens Stoltenberg yesterday said Ukraine will someday join the Western military alliance.
NATO allies have agreed that Ukraine will become a member of our alliance, but at the same time, that is a long-term perspective. What is the issue now is to ensure that Ukraine prevail as a sovereign independent nation, and that therefore we need to support Ukraine.
Ukraine's potential membership was a focal point of Russia's invasion a year ago. In the U.S., millions who hope to benefit from the Biden administration's student debt forgiveness program may have those hopes dashed, as conservatives who dominate the Supreme Court appeared skeptical of the president's authority to forgive up to $20,000 of student debt. The court held a three-hour hearing on two challenges to the program. Eileen Alfandari reports.
To cancel student loan debt, the Biden administration relied on the HEROES Act. The acronym stands for the Higher Education Relief Opportunities for Students. Now extended, it allows the Secretary of Education to waive or modify the terms of federal student loans as necessary in connection with a national emergency. Chief Justice Roberts indicated the administration may have overstepped the bounds of what is permissible by canceling up to $20,000 of student loan debt per person.
We're talking about $500 billion and 43 million Americans. How does that fit under the normal understanding of modifying?
Prolegar said the reading of the original statute would allow elimination of student debt.
Americans have struggled to pay rent, utilities, food, and many have been unable to pay their debts. To head off immediate harm for student loan borrowers, two secretaries across two administrations invoked the HEROES Act to suspend interest and payment obligations for all Americans with federally held loans. But if that forbearance ends without further relief, it's undisputed that defaults and delinquencies will surge above pre-pandemic levels.
The administration says 26 million people have applied to have up to $20,000 in federal student loans forgiven under the plan. The Supreme Court is expected to issue its ruling in June. I'm Eileen Alfandari.
And today marks the eighth anniversary of the war in Yemen, which has killed hundreds of thousands of people and has been called the world's worst humanitarian crisis. I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio.
And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Today, we are going to spend the hour focusing on Haiti, the coup against the first democratically elected president of Haiti, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, actually took place a year ago. It was 2004, February 29th, so it was a leap year. So this being March 1st, it actually is the anniversary date. Before we welcome our guests, let us go first to a clip from Randall Robinson, basically describing what happened in the lead up and that. Let's go to that clip.
Colin Powell made a statement in April, this April. He said that he had been criticized fiercely for going into Haiti, but that a bloodbath was about to take place, Pierre, that a civil war was in the offing, and he sent a plane in to bring Aristide out, and Aristide agreed, and he came out, and we spared the country a bloodbath. Donald Rumsfeld said that when the plane landed in Antigua for refueling, that if Aristide had a problem about anything, he would have said something to his Caribbean colleagues in Antigua when he was there. Colin Powell had lied. Donald Rumsfeld had lied. First, the army that was making the civil war that Powell was trying to avoid was an army that was armed by the United States. An army that was equipped by the United States, an army that was trained by American special forces in the Dominican Republic. One might safely assume that if we financed it, that if we armed it, that if we equipped it, if we trained it, then we directed it. For we would not have given all of that to any group that could do anything it wanted to do at any time. And what was so clear throughout all of this, that once the rebels, and that's too nice a term for these thugs who had a long string of killings to their names, that once they crossed the border into Haiti in February of 2004, all George Bush had to say, all Colin Powell had to say, all Condoleezza Rice had to say to them was stop. They would have stopped immediately. But they never said that, which means that they approved what they were doing. Now, in this country, because we didn't know anything about Haiti, we didn't know where this town was in relation to that town. When they crossed the border and they started tearing around in the north of the country, burning police stations, loosing prisoners and that sort of thing, we thought that Port-au-Prince was threatened. But the closest these rebels would ever come to Port-au-Prince was the moment they stepped across the border. They did not go west and south to Port-au-Prince. They went north, away from Port-au-Prince. There were only 200 of them. The 1 million plus people living in Port-au-Prince were hostile to them. They could not possibly have overrun the capital. Aristide knew exactly where they were. His helicopter pilot had flown reconnaissance and watched them as they made their stops around the country, killing people with their new American weapons, killing policemen who had no useful weapons because of the embargo imposed by President Clinton and not lifted by George Bush. And so Powell lied by omission. And so that was the context in late February, that we were all frightened, particularly people who know the Aristides, who know their children, who know what decent people they were and what they tried to do. Aristide, in a country where 70% of the people are peasant farmers who make less than $225 a year, enraged the white elites by saying that the minimum wage should be raised to $2 a day. Aristide, who was born poor and black, who has on his birth certificate Creole words that say people from the outside, that say peasant. Aristide said this has to be removed from the birth certificates. All Haitians ought to have the same birth certificate, notwithstanding race and class. This enraged the white elites, becoming so enraged that they published on the internet racist depictions of the president, installing cameras in his bathroom, publishing pictures on the internet of the president nude in his home. That's how vicious it was. All of which our country knew about. and supported.
Wow, that was a description, Randall Robinson describing 2004, the lead up to the so-named coup today, is 19 years since that coup. I would now like to welcome our guest, who is based in Haiti, Edouard Pacha-Volpe, popularly known as Pacha. Since 1998, he has been a member, an active member of Famille Lavalas, a political organization headed by Jean-Bertrand Aristide and supported by the vast majority of impoverished people in Haiti. In 2011, he joined the executive committee of Famille Lavalas. He runs his own business and holds an academic degree from Institute in Paris, France. Pacha, welcome back to Sojourner Truth.
Margaret, it's a pleasure to be with you, especially on an occasion like today, which reminds us of the real stories of our country concerning democracy, where we see that, unfortunately, there's a will from the international community not to let democracy prosper in Haiti.
Absolutely. And Pacha, were you in Haiti, or if you were not, you were very aware of the events around 2004. That description that Randall Robinson, that quickly just played, do you think that was accurate? Anything you wanted to share with our audience about the actual situation of 2004?
Actually, I was in Haiti in 2004, and that night is a memorable night. It's one night that I don't think I will ever forget, because one of the persons that accompanied President Aristide that night, that was also forced to leave the country with him, was my uncle, Franz Gabriel, that was at his house when it was stormed by special forces, imposing him to leave immediately. So I did receive a phone call that night around maybe 3:30 in the morning, when my uncle called me personally and told me, I just want to let you know that we are being forced to go on a plane and that we will be leaving tonight. So they left without passports, without documentation, without nothing. So it was really something unthinkable, knowing that it was the U.S. Special Forces that came in personally to drive him out of his house directly to the airport, and like you mentioned before, to different countries. But the first stop was, I think, Jamaica and then Central Africa before they reach, after several months, South Africa. So it was a time of history that we should remember all, as the description that Randall just gave. We can see when, unfortunately, you have the United States and other members of the international rebellion and violence against democracy, because the first democratically elected president in 1990 and re-elected again in 2000, and he was the only president that they didn't want him to his term. Both times that it was that he was elected president, there is only one reason to promote. I think another phrase that he used, that was, everyone is a human being, because in Haiti we did not consider the poor people as human beings. So as he was helping them to rise up, putting up education, putting up healthcare system, putting up also housing system, those minority as far as people, but majority and numbers, a certain group of Haitian private sector, we would put it this way, did not accept that more young people, more young black people, people who started a new level of education. And this is when they decided to put up a fight against the person Aristide, what he represented for the majority. So it's unfortunately sad that 19 years after, instead of the country progressing, because the critics were on President Aristide coming from the international community and that private sector, saying that he was a dictator or didn't he was doing corruption or he was building up people against people. We're realizing now, 19 years after, that they had a plan for Haiti. And the plan for Haiti was not a positive plan. Today, more right. than ever, we have been out of the democracy, where since 2010, the international community started deciding who they would appoint to be president. It was first time in history that someone who was 7 in the poll, the international community came back up and said, no, we want him to be on the second round. They took out 6 other contenders. They put the 7th one in front and had election where they appointed Martelly as president. They repeated the same thing again in 2015 to give us what we have today to Haiti for a while now. Since the Saline massacre that you came to visit, 50 times worse than what it was. Raped, children being killed, gang members getting bigger and stronger. It's really a dark moment for Haiti, and to get out of it, all Haitians need to get back together.
Right, and Pacho, we are going to talk a bit after our station break about the way forward and the vision for Haiti. But it does seem that we know, as you say, that there were 2 coups against President Aristide during his tenure, so to speak, both involving the United States.
Communication is a little bit bad. Can you?
Okay. Right. Are you hearing
Can
me
you
okay,
repeat
Pacha?
It for me, Margaret? Because the communication is a little bit bad.
Okay. You are on the ground in Haiti, and so that could be okay. I was just saying that there were 2 coups against President Aristide during his tenure. And it seems that since 2004, really, the Haitian Movement for Democracy has stepped up and stayed on the streets, even with the selected presidents of Martelly and Jovenel Moïse. That movement for democracy continues. I think we have Pasha back on the line now. Pasha, you're back. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you very
okay.
well.
Right.
To continue to what your question was.
Yes, continue, Pasha.
What is very sad also in all this situation is that it's a situation that can be fixed. As the hypocrisy that is in the wording that they are saying is that they wanted a Haitian solution. Haiti has been saying that it's important to have a Haitian solution, but whatever has been proposed on the table is not taken into account. They want to dictate their solution to the Haitian people. And this is not going to happen, unfortunately, because the majority has decided to disconnect completely from them. And without being able to reach this majority of people, they are unable to come up with solutions. So what is important right now is for the international community to understand they can accompany us in a dialogue to have a Haitian project on the table. We don't want Haiti to continue going that path. From 2004 to 2023, we have been getting worse completely. Nothing has been improving. While during those 19 years, we have been imposed a way of life by the international community. They had chosen who they wanted to govern this country, and it has not worked, and it's not being progressive for the majority of the population. So it is important that today everybody gets together. If the international community want to be part of it, it will be very much welcome, because we do need human resources to accompany us to build those capacities, because the state has never been as corrupted as it is today. But it's a fallen state because you don't have the human capacity to bring it back up, to put back the security that Haiti needs right now. But on one hand, you have a Haitian-led police force that has been trained by mostly the international community, and today you are not able to equip them on the pretext that there is an embargo. But if you're coming down with militaries to take care of gang members, with what are you going to come down with? You're going to come down with equipment, materials, to be able to do so. But you don't want to put those materials available to the police today, which is not acceptable. So I don't think that they are ready to see Haiti develop itself and go forward. And until they are ready to see it or to accept it, I don't think the population will reconnect with none of the those members, whether it's international community or local actors that are embracing the international community by praising them to come down with boots on the ground.
Right. And Pasha, we unfortunately only have a few minutes left. And I wonder if you want to say anything further about the CARICOM initiative, because as you know, they have been under tremendous pressure. We know that Jamaica and the Bahamas have very close relationships with the United States and with Canada. So I wasn't surprised that Canada had organized a delegation, you know, that included those two nations in particular. As far as you know, was there any discussion about a further meeting involving more members of CARICOM with Fami Lavalas and other key players, as you said, taking place outside of Haiti in the very near future? Pasha, you know if that was discussed at all or no information on that?
It was not discussed as far as a dialogue. It was mentioned at one point that probably they should have a follow-up meeting outside of Haiti, but nothing concrete, nothing special. If I was to suggest something to the CARICOM, is the problem of Haiti is not that complex or even not that complicated. It can be simply resolved with the goodwill of all actors, not wanting to impose their mindset or their way of doing it. Haiti cannot go to election now. It's impossible. The security issues that are in Haiti enables it to go towards election. Haiti needs a dialogue around security and what can we do together to build back our institutions locally. We have one police force. Even if it remains with 10 people or 15 people or 20 people, we have to build it back again. So it will take time to recover from this situation. But the sooner we put ourselves together with a plan, with a project, to say, this is the plan for Haiti for the next couple of years. before reaching the election. This is what we are going to do to bring back security. When we mean security, it's not only the gangs, but it also about feeding our population. How can we feed them? Because the next problem coming along, Margaret, is that the population is unable to grow right now in Tibonit, which is the major plantations of rice. They are unable to reach those places now. So in a couple of months, instead of 5 or 6 million people, you will have 7 million, because the food shortage is going to get more and more present. So if I was to suggest to CARICOM something, is to be attentive to the Haitian population, to what they are saying. They don't want boots on the ground, but they want a Haitian solution that can help them move forward. I'm sorry right. for the communication today, Margaret, but it was a pleasure to be with you today again.
No worries, Pasha, and we'll have you back and try to have pre-plant some better connections here, Pierre. We'll have you back as well. But Pasha, what you're saying is really very, very important. Meanwhile, what I would like to do is to go to a clip now from massacres in Haiti, where Maxine Waters is describing having to go to the Central African Republic to rescue President Amnesty. Can you play that clip while we start to sound out the content?
Early on February 29th, 2004, the president of Haiti called upon the international community to protect his government from a rebel army advancing on the capital, Port-au-Prince. Hours later, however, President Jean-Bertrand Aristide found himself on a U.S. military jet, surrounded by Marines, being escorted to an unknown destination. Back in Haiti, hundreds of members of his party and cabinet were arrested and imprisoned. More than a year later, as he watches the last remaining months of his term expire, Aristide remains defiant towards those he says forced him into exile for the second time in 15 years.
I am still the only elected president of Haiti. They voted for a president. A good number, unfortunately, were killed for that, for defending an elected president.
President Aristide told me that he'd been forced from his home, that he had literally been kidnapped. They told him if he did not leave, he would be killed, and a lot of other Haitians would be killed.
Every time the Haitian majority has been allowed to go to the polls, it has voted for the same people with the same agenda. Each time that agenda was pursued, the government was overthrown by military force.
Aristide represented a people's reform movement and was trying for the first time ever in Haitian history to be the voice of the voiceless.
This was, again, the Haitian people in power with all the warts and all the sloppiness and anarchy that come with a newly born government.
As we attempt to understand how a president so overwhelmingly elected by his people lost the support of the international community, we are confronted by those who defend Aristide and accuse the United States of orchestrating his removal.
This is not about anything but the ideology of the far right wing that now really controls the United States government, that does not support popular democracy.
Orders from on high are that we are to concentrate on this question: just how much was Aristide responsible? But we don't have to follow the orders from on high. And if we're sensible, we see that the only question was how it would implode.
But we are also confronted by those who blame the collapse on Aristide himself.
There wasn't any question that things were going to fall apart in Haiti. The immediate roots are part of the tragedy of Aristide. This man failed to deliver. Hopes crashed.
President Aristide didn't just make mistakes. He willfully misgoverned, and eventually he paid the price for that because he lost his ability to control the whirlwind of violence that he had unleashed on the country for a decade.
As the bitterly partisan debate about one of the most controversial figures of the 20th century continues to rage, it remains clear that Haiti is in crisis.
I saw things that people are never supposed to see, that just inhuman bodies that you just see. I mean, their daily life is to walk by a body that's being eaten by a dog because it was killed, you know, the night before. It's a setback that's multiple decades backwards. Everything's broken, and everybody knows it.
Aristide was not perfect, but he represented an institution. If allowed to grow and prosper, it symbolized another relationship that Haiti would have to the world.
The justice that Aristide fought for, that the Haitian people demand, is still existing. Haiti is poor as dirt. Children are still dying. The situation of Haiti defies logic. To see the Haitian people living like that is incredible. My hair is standing on the back of my head right now as I'm talking to you. This is such a waste. This is so undignified. This is a crime against humanity.
From Aristide and the Endless Revolution, again describing that to we will try to post that clip from Maxine Waters describing her visit to the Central African Republic to basically save President Aristide. And we are getting Pasha Bobre back on the line. He is on the ground in Haiti, as you can imagine. Just some difficulties with communication there. We are going to take a short station break, and when we return, we will continue our coverage on this 19th anniversary of the 2004 coup, U.S.-backed coup that took place in Haiti. Joining us will be Pierre Labossière, and we also hope to get Pasha Bobre, who is on the ground in Haiti, back on the line. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Old pirates, yes, they rob I, sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs, redemption songs.
Okay, this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. What I'd like to do now, we are still having some technical issues, is to go to the clip from Massacres in Haiti. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
We know the history of Haiti. We know about Papa Doc. We know about Baby Doc. We know their relationship to some in the United States of America. We understand what Haiti has been through. We understand that President Aristide presented a new possibility. And I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, it's a miracle that he's alive today. It's a miracle. and we have to protect him. And even with our visit there, I did not want them to think that our visit with Le Celine had anything to do with him. He knows how to manage himself and how to work out, you know, being safe and all of that. But I want to tell you that he has to be careful. Has to be careful. Because the attempts to kill him in the past did not happen because luckily they had eyes on what was going on. They had eyes on it to the point where they took him out of Haiti. Took him first to Jamaica and from Jamaica on to South Africa. And I have to tell you, I was never a big, big supporter of Colin Powell's, but I remember the day I met him in the hallway after the Aristides had been taken out of Haiti. And I said, what are you going to do about it? And he said, they can leave any time that they want to. They were up in Central African Republic by now. And they could not. And I said, they cannot leave any time that they want to. He said, well, as far as I know, I said, well, I tell you what, we're going up there and we're going to get him. And so we got together with an attorney that had worked with him and with some very, very progressive media and with Randall Robinson and Hazel Robinson and others. We got us a plane and we went up to the Central African Republic. We were greeted by young folks on pickup trucks with AK-47s. And we just said, we just here to talk about President Aristide. They had just been involved in a coup at the time. And so they took us to what was, I guess, the palace up there. And we waited and waited and waited until the new president came in. And, of course, President Aristide, who is brilliant and speaks all of these languages, he was able to speak to them and talk with them about, you know, what was going on. And so I'll just tell you this little story a little bit. They said, welcome. We have made a place for you to stay overnight. We will have a dinner for you. And I said, I can't stay. I got to go. You know, I said, I've got to go back to Washington, D.C. And guess what? I learned something. The new foreign minister, a young man, looked at me, and you know what he said? You don't turn down African hospitality. And I said, that's right. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stay. So we had dinner from what they call the big fish that comes out of the river, which they live on. And, of course, we were able to get back to this palace. And the president, who they said was so busy, 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 finally we talked them into bringing him back. And he basically talked about us staying because having been in the coup, they wanted to show that the Americans were there, to have people believe that we were there to support them who had taken over. And so we talked and we talked and we talked. And then the president basically said, basically in French, why would the United States send two women up here to talk to us? And of course, we didn't challenge that. We were not about being feminists at the time. We sat there and we continued to talk. And then he started to talk about what bad shape they were in and how they wanted desperately to get help from the World Bank and asked me if I would help them with the World Bank. I said, I can make no promises, but I will do everything that I possibly can. And finally, when I thought it was the right time, I said, Mr. President, you've got to let us go. We've got to get out of here. I said, as a matter of fact, if I'm not in Washington, D.C. by tomorrow morning, they're going to think you've kidnapped me. And so this changes mine. And they let us out, no lights, in the dark, back to the plane where we had landed. And they had young people, you know, there with the guns and all. I guess they thought they were protecting the plane, what have you. But we got out. Now,
so that is Congresswoman Maxine Waters describing very, very tense moments there in the Central African Republic where she went, and many of us feel, saved the life of the president Addison. We do have Pasha Bobre back on the line. He is on the ground in Haiti. Let's go directly to you. I'd like to welcome back to Sojourner Truth Pierre Lavoisier, and who is a co-founder of the Haiti Action Committee. Pierre, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Margaret. What a great, I'm so happy to be and honored to be part of this program today. And
We talked with, and Pasha is now back. Pasha, can you hear me now?
I hear you now, but every time you start talking, I kind of lose you. But now okay. I hear you.
Okay, very good. Pasha, I was asking if you could describe to our listeners the situation on the ground now, and also anything you could share with us about this recent visit of some members of CARICOM to Haiti earlier this week.
Okay, right now on the ground, Margaret, Haiti, as you knew it before, is no longer Port-au-Prince in particular, is no longer a safe place where you can decide to go any places freely. Kidnappings are a daily activity. We're not talking about one kidnapping, we're talking about multiple kidnappings every day. War zones are all over the city, from the north part to the south part to the mountain parts, all the way to the border of the Dominican Republic. All of them are war zones getting in the capital every day. Haiti has never been in this situation where people are just being killed every day like they were animals. You have no government in place to even address these issues. The police is getting weaker and weaker or disappearing completely right now. So it's a state completely left on its own. But in this reality, you have a complete disconnection of the mass population with the government, with the private sector, and with the civil society, because this population doesn't feel that all those groups are looking towards them and taking into account their poverty, their misery, the situation that they are living in and that they have been living, the conditions that they are living. So they are not willing to step up and fight this gang hood, I would say, that is putting up right now. So we are in a very, 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 very difficult moment in our history, where we need to get back together, but put down something on the table where the population identifies itself. What will be the future? If we want this country to develop, it will not develop if we don't take into account first the priority of the population. More than 6 million people are dying of hunger today. So what are we going to do for them? Until we start talking about them, I don't see any changes and the near future. This week, there was a delegation of CARICOM. It was probably first in a while that wanted to talk to everybody, I would put it, that did not have one group that they were prioritizing, that wanted to get an idea of what was going on the ground. And I think the message was clear that there needs to be a dialogue among Haitian, there needs to be a solution, a Haitian solution, which doesn't favorize the coming of militaries on the ground, because we have seen those militaries come on the ground for the past more than 100 years and still no change. Haiti has gotten worse instead of getting better. So now I think they got a clear message that it was important that we do create a dialogue where everybody could sit as on a same level basis. So when we will be talking about Haiti, that the priority is towards Haiti, that There is no one-man show because no one has the legitimacy of saying that I am the one to decide for Haiti. So all those groups need to gather together, the political sector, the private sector, the civil society, the population, and whoever is acting government around one table and start talking about security. Right, so we can move forward afterwards.
Right. Now, Pasha, hopefully you're hearing me, know that the U.S., Canada, the OAS, and the U.N. have been pressing for a military force to go into Haiti. And they have been putting tremendous pressure on CARICOM, the Caribbean nations, to support such an effort. But thus far, that effort failed. We do understand that Canada organized this a small delegation that included the Prime Minister of Jamaica, also the Bahamas, and officials from the Bahamas and Trinidad and Tobago for this meeting. So hopefully, I understand CARICOM wants to have a larger meeting, a more in-depth meeting outside of Haiti, so that Lavalasin and other folks could meet with CARICOM and discuss more of a way forward. Do you know if there was any discussion about such an upcoming in-depth meeting outside of Haiti, given the security issues with CARICOM? Pierre, you may want to comment on that, because just to comment on the pressure that CARICOM has faced, I think you might have, Pasha's line might have dropped again. So, Pierre, tell us your thoughts then about this tremendous pressure on CARICOM and the refusal of CARICOM to go along with the plan of the U.S. and Canada. Pierre Lavoisier.
I think I'm okay. And that's a good first. That's really fantastic that to get CARICOM to really take a strong position. And let me salute Pasha for this very powerful presentation that he made about the situation in Haiti. And this is actually what's going on the ground. He knows, and he has expressed it very well. And people need to look at the majority population and what they want, and stop taking the position of the so-called international community. They used to call themselves friends of Haiti, but now they have called themselves the core group. And Haitians on the ground are in such disagreement with them, and have so much contempt for that core group, so-called Friends of Haiti, that they refer to them as a core gang, because it's been 19 years and the country hasn't gone anywhere, but pretty much conditions have worsened. And so CARICOM needs to chart a very independent course. They need to look at the reality of the Haitian people as fellow Caribbean people, as brothers and sisters, who've been very, very... very much whose societies are being destroyed, their communities are being destroyed, their very humanity are being destroyed in this constant carnage that's taking place. And they need to take a strong stand and be very, very strong about this. So that's my position on that. And and there is a lot of pressure on the Caribbean nations to kowtow to the so-called Friends of Haiti, to the international community, and be the black faces who will be the enforcers, who will be the overseers of the plantation. And that CARICOM, the people of the Caribbean, must make sure that their governments have some spine and will not allow for themselves to be accomplices to the destruction of the nation of Haiti.
Right, Pierre, we want to thank you for joining us. We're out of time. I'd like to thank you, Pierre. We'll have to have you back so you can weigh in on all of this. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives. Please stay tuned for the next upcoming program, Sojourner Truth. We'll be back on the air tomorrow. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. You all, please stay well and safe. Thank you.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Annual Cascade Festival of African Films throughout the month of February, with a collection of films by African directors from over 16 nations.
Films will be screened at Cascade PCC, Hollywood Theater, and virtually. Full schedule and location information can be found at africanfilmfestival.org.
That's the 33rd Annual Cascade Festival of African Films, showing Africa through African lenses, happening February 3rd until Saturday, March 4th, in celebration of Black History Month. Full schedule and location information can be found at africanfilmfestival.org.
Can't get good reception of KBOO on your radio? Just type in www.kboo.fm on your PC or laptop and click on Listen Live. We're just a mouse click away.
Connect with your favorite community radio station on social media.
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/kboomradio.
And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/kboo.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kboo radio.
We also provide content to the free music archive.
An interactive library of high-quality legal audio downloads.
That's at freemusicarchive.org/curator/KBOO.
You can find all of this and more on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
Thanks for listening.
Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
You're listening to All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 2, KBOO's special programming campaign. Check out all the special programs we're bringing you in February and March at